You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 5th of January, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, so that means we have geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org here today. Matt, Happy New Year, sir. How are you doing?
Well, Happy New Year to you. My New Year starts off with me having to take one of my kittens to the vet. And in the car ride over there to be spayed, she meowed to the point where I'm a little frazzled. So it was just pretty much nonstop, but it's something that needed to be done. I'm a little bonkers right now, more than normal. So if I say anything crazy, that's the reason why.
Well, I'm just very glad that you're actually able to make it today when you've got such a hectic schedule with your kittens and your cats and your vet, and I'm very glad your cat is okay. Today, we're going to be talking about BlackRock, Zelensky, and Ukraine, and we're going to be concentrating on an opinion piece by Kurt Nimmo from globalresearch.ca. BlackRock is the world's largest asset management and investment firm. It invests more than $10 trillion in client funds, a mountain of cash that casts a shadow over the gross domestic product of many countries, including Germany, the fourth largest GDP in the world. It is fair to say that it controls or has outsized influence on the Federal Reserve, Wall Street banks, including Goldman Sachs and Vanguard, the WEF meet and greet at Davos, and its control freak Great Reset, and all that follows, including President Biden and Congress. Larry Fink, the founder and CEO of BlackRock, has teamed up with the man in perpetual green, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Specialists of this company are already helping Ukraine to structure the fund for the reconstruction of our state, said the green man after a video call with Fink, according to Bloomberg. And I just have to stop there. I don't really agree with calling him the green man. The green man I see as a positive influence. What they're really referring to here is his just continual appearance in a green t-shirt, which shows no respect for any of the world leaders that he is meeting with. I guess it's just to pretend that he's somehow some kind of an action man and that he's actually taking place fighting in the army, which of course he isn't. I guess maybe you could say where he's wearing that green t-shirt just to prove that he's not in front of a green screen. Perhaps that's the reason for it. Well, Zelensky has taken his worldwide panhandling act to the next level. According to Zelensky's government webpage, which is up and running, although average Ukrainians are freezing in the dark, Larry Fink will be helping to drum up the funds to rebuild what will be blown up in Ukraine. And as for Zelensky's website, it is safe for the moment, hosted as it is in Santa Clara, California. Here is a quote from it. In accordance with the preliminary agreements struck earlier this year between the head of state and Larry Fink, the BlackRock team has been working for several months on a project to advise the Ukrainian government on how to structure the country's reconstruction funds. And of course, this is ignoring the fact that Russia is already reconstructing places like Mariupol. I mean, they've already got new blocks of flats that have been built in order to house the refugees that left Mariupol. I mean, they've been working really hard on the reconstruction there. So I guess what Zelensky is talking about here is the rest of Ukraine, possibly talking about power outages, power stations that have been blown up by Russia. What do you make of what he has to say here about hooking up with Larry Fink, Matt?
Well, unfortunately, it's not a huge surprise. The oligarchy is now a monopoly under Fink's control. I think $10 trillion is a low figure. It was higher than that just a few years ago. Everybody of any economic importance in quote-unquote Joe Biden's cabinet comes directly from BlackRock. And many of the world's central banks are being run by people who BlackRock has trained, and vice versa. Ex-central bankers sitting on their board. Switzerland, Israel, a few other places. So this is just par for the course. Of course, there was no bidding or anything else. All the bailouts were done through BlackRock. So that means now, and let me make something else clear. For those people who've been following me for a long time, back in the early 2000s, up until 2010, I was writing extensively on the third worldization of Ukraine. Spotty power was the norm before this war got started. Extremely high unemployment, especially with young people, was a massive problem before the war. About maybe 25% of the West, meaning Western Ukraine, firms were profitable, probably less than that. And anything that matters really was in the East, which is no longer under Kiev's control. The schools being closed, hospitals running a couple hours a day. That was all years ago. So, you know, this just adds to it. And of course, the IMF and private banks that run it were pouring money into Ukraine, knowing full well that they'd never see it again. Showing this revolving door. Now it's even more institutionalized. BlackRock is the world power. It's not crazy to say that it's BlackRock versus Russia and China and their allies. Larry Fink has stated that Russia's invasion of Ukraine signals an attack on globalization, which, you know, he's finally figured out. And of course, they're looking at, the BlackRock Corporation is looking at so much untapped investment potential in both of those countries, although BlackRock does function in China, but very, very much under state supervision. So this is central to them. Importantly, it's also noteworthy that while the West is totally dependent on foreign countries for its commodities, for its basic support, even its military production, Russia doesn't need anybody. Russia is more or less self-sufficient, and these sanctions have forced it on them, just like South Africa, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. As we've said 100 times, it's been a boon to Russia. So the dependency only exists one way. Russia's military production is all under state control. The American, of course, is privatized, and all over the world, it's total dependency, which is already implied by globalization. Now, I have the feeling, since BlackRock is a very Jewish organization, the idea of banning the Orthodox Church, any ties with Russia, which is pretty much all of them, comes from BlackRock. Because when they, if they're able to even reconstruct anything rather than just exploit it, which is what they're going to do, it's all been stripped down by now anyway. Fink has already said ideology, leftist and globalist ideology, is going to be built into the system. So, and very little investment in oil and gas, according to him. This is massive divestment in those areas. So the oil and gas companies may look askance at all of this, and many of the oligarchs actually took their funds from it. So this is a serious matter economically, diplomatically, and ideologically. I don't think that the ban on orthodoxy is going to change until you have a Jewish president in Kiev, so-called, a Jewish BlackRock organization, a Jewish banking cartel, heavily Jewish cabinet in Washington, all being involved in reinventing what it is to be Ukrainian. And the final, the ultimate result is going to be a completely pastoral, utterly dependent, non-industrialized Ukraine, really as a transit point for drugs and girls. And that's the ultimate future for the country if they don't remove themselves from the grip of this kahal.
Of course, Zelensky has announced that Ukraine is going to be at the World Economic Forum at Davos, but it doesn't even have an economy at the moment. It's on a war footing. Getting back to the article here, Zelensky and Fink agreed to focus in the near term on coordinating the efforts of all potential investors and participants in the reconstruction of our country, channeling investment into the most relevant and impactful sectors of the Ukrainian economy, CNBC reports. Good luck with that. It might be a good idea to glance at Ukraine's massive corruption before investing a dime into that black hole. According to Transparency International, Ukraine is the second most corrupt country in Europe and ranked 120 out of 182 of the most corrupt countries in the world. According to Dragon Capital, the richest Ukrainian oligarchs in 2016, 2 years after the US-orchestrated coup in Kiev, have accumulated over $11 billion, almost 13% of Ukraine's gross domestic product. Much of the money accrued by Rinat Akhmetov, Igor Kolomoisky, Viktor Pinchuk, and former president and confectionery and automotive magnate Petro Poroshenko was taken through the neoliberal organized theft of public assets, known as privatization. Kolomoisky is a major funder of the right sector. He is also widely seen as the puppet master of the former comedian and current president Zelensky. His reach includes business operations in the US. Ukraine is a money launderer's dream come true. Its banking sector thrives on Ponzi schemes. Oligarchs reap fortunes, skimming billions from government-subsidized gas prices. Corrupt officials collaborate with oligarchs to monopolize business. In 2015, it was determined that less than 50% of businesses in Ukraine turned a profit, and 9.8% of all business operations were controlled by and benefited corrupt government officials and the oligarchs they work for. So this money that is going to be invested, it's certainly not going to be seen by the Ukrainians. I'm interested in what it says here about right sector and Kolomoisky, because we heard a lot about right sector at the time of the Maidan Revolution, and I've heard nothing about them since. It seems as if they were just used for this revolution, and then they disappeared. What do you know about Kolomoisky and right sector, Matt?
Well, Kolomoisky is a Jew, of course. There's a lot of media disinformation about him, that he supported the secession of the eastern regions, which, of course, obviously isn't true. These guys they're mostly Jews. But even if they're not, the handful that aren't, they are pretty much of one mind in terms of economic theory. It's kind of like Russia in the early 90s. And he actually hints at this by saying that both Poroshenko and the current president are his stooges. Remember, Ukraine is not an independent country. When Kosovo gained its so-called independence, it just became a protectorate of the European Union. In fact, it's right on its flag. It's just the European Union symbol and the map of Kosovo on it. But also, like Kosovo, BlackRock has hired a major New York PR firm to control how Zelensky is perceived, to manipulate opinion polls, to control professors, of course, journalists that are easy targets. Now, as far as right sector goes, remember these groups, as of in all this, in elections, they could barely crack 0.5%. They're not popular. They're, at least for a time, were artificially financed, very much like the militias in Syria were by the West. They're not a relevant factor. Now, Nimmo suggests that, well, there's going to be a problem with reconstruction because of Ukraine's massive corruption. As you know, I've been writing about this for, God, a ridiculous amount of time. There is no healthy sector of the economy to go to that then could reconstruct the others. They're simply, there's one small group of people who control everything. But since the economy no longer exists and these businesses are really not functioning that they own, they're making their money now by stealing money from the IMF, the U.S. government, U.S. taxpayers, military stuff. These are people who are selling the military materiel abroad. This is what they're doing. I mean, they really. How long can you asset strip? There's no market there. The hryvnia is worthless. I definitely question, Transparency International, these NGOs, they're radically understating the nature of the problem. And this is nothing new. But not only is that not a problem for BlackRock, they depend on it. Ukrainians aren't going to see any of this. They're not going to benefit from any of this. There's no way to reconstruct the market overnight. And this entire thing, starting in 2004, but then again in 2014, was to take Ukraine away from the one place it can function profitably, and that's within the customs union, Russia and Central Asia. That's where their market is, and China as well, of course. But trying to attach it to Western Europe, that it doesn't have the market to buy its own products. I mean, what the hell does Ukraine make that the West so desperately needs? It's really nothing. And so it's just, again, it's just going to be a very minor footnote, probably at the same rank as Kosovo as far as Western Europe is concerned. You have an educated population that can be paid almost nothing to do whatever they're told. And that's what this is. Of course, even the Ukrainian army doesn't exist. These are all Western mercenaries now who are doing the fighting. All the POWs seem to be from other countries. But, you know, in the beginning of this war, you know, as of the right sector, they were talked about way too much. They never really had the manpower, and the equipment was very spotty, kind of almost like a Viet Cong type. They haven't been relevant in a very long time. They were never very large and clearly never very popular, even when they were I cited for some of these guys in my Ukraine book from a few years ago, and it was okay, but I don't think they believe a word of it. They certainly, and you have plenty of these militias now that have long since given up, not just in the war, but on this whole notion that Ukraine could really function as an independent state. It never has been independent, and the only time it may have any kind of independence would be a part of a Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, China market. That's a truly only hope for the future.
Well, the West wants it, obviously, to be globalized, but globalization itself has had to be put on pause, or it looks like it at least, because of this war. In July, the Associated Press reported, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's dismissal of senior officials is casting an inconvenient light on an issue that the Biden administration has largely ignored since the outbreak of war with Russia, Ukraine's history of rampant corruption and shaky governance. Of course, Biden, or that is, since he is obviously cognitively impaired, his neocon advisors, do not give a hoot about the suffering of average Ukrainians victimized by freehand oligarchs and corrupt government officials. It is all about Russia, China, and the role of the world hegemon. Earlier this year, Larry Fink told stockholders, Russia's invasion of Ukraine is reversing the long-running trend of globalization. Strangely, Fink seems to believe Russia's effort to keep NATO out of Ukraine and away from its western border has exacerbated the polarization and extremist behavior we are seeing across society today. Submit, lest you be tarred and feathered as a polarized extremist. It now appears Fink's cherished globalization is headed for the rocks as the growth of capital markets slow and the centrally managed economy pivots towards recession. Actually, a full-blown depression, but this scary subject is rarely broached in the respectable misinformation, narrative-strict corporate propaganda media. And I'm interested to hear by him basically implying that there's a big increase in polarization and extremism that is being driven by this war in Russia. I can see that people are upset that their economies are being destroyed and they're having to pay so much money for electricity and for petrol, but I don't really see any extremist behavior that is increasing because of this. What do you think he's referring to there, Matt, about exacerbating the extremist behavior that we're seeing across society today? How is that related to what's going on in Russia, or Ukraine, rather?
I'm not sure. I don't know what society he's talking about. In Russia, of course, Putin remains popular roughly around his average, 70-73%. And remember, you know, Fink deals with non-existent assets. He deals with abstractions like money, not actually producing anything. Given his ideological background, his so-called religious background, keeping people thinking that there are these militias that are ready to attack him at any moment is important. It's not crazy today to say that, you know, Ukraine is not just a colony of New York and Washington. But in more detail, it's a colony very specifically of BlackRock, because they're far more powerful than any government, with the exception of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which it clearly is at war with. And the Chinese 20th Congress of the Party had tightened control around this stuff, gave the party more power, the presidency more power, precisely for this reason, because he's going up against very wealthy people like Fink and his organization that want to change China's laws and buy up these assets. But as far as Western Europe goes, too, as you mentioned, this is a forced deindustrialization which I think has a lot to do with this, the massive migration issue from a few years ago that continues. There's no particular interest in Ukrainian migration, which shouldn't surprise anybody because they're actual migrants and educated ones. But having this reserve army to shut down any actual extremist movement or organization, because extremism, I mean, truth is extreme, especially today. Truth is polarizing. By its very, I mean, Christ was polarizing. That's how truth works, especially in a society that's based on illusion and imagery. But here you have, you know, Fink using whatever army he can get his hands on to promote his agenda. So the mercenaries, the taxpayer money coming from Washington to support them, the military suppliers and all the rest of it, these are the PMCs. These are essentially bodyguards for Fink and his people. And and don't forget how often I've spoken about the new Khazaria, that some of these oligarchs proclaimed near Odessa, which has been put on hold for now. So this is without a doubt a big part of that. And this is going to be one of the most concentrated Jewish projects probably in history, and in Jewish history. This is to completely see how far they can Judaize a country that survived, you know, Stalin, that survived World War II, that survived all of this, seeing where their breaking point is. So I have the feeling maybe he's talking about Ukraine, because you have so many conservative sectors there that don't want this war, who hate this government. The government has almost no support. And again, just like the armies, these governments are just fronts that BlackRock can use. There's no independent decision making. There's no, and of course, this is why a few years ago, maybe a little bit more, Ukrainian government gave more power to its own presidency, partially to distract people from the issues at hand, but partially because corruption is much easier to institutionalize when you have a strong executive. Just like the opposite is true. Good things are easier to get done when you have a strong executive. So, and press censorship, religious censorship, this and educational censorship, this is all part of the BlackRock agenda to totally Judaize this part of the world. And as I've said a million times before, it's a tragedy because Ukraine has all of the resources and the education and the people to create a massively prosperous society. But given the meddling by the West and by people like Fink, it's now at the door of the fourth world.
Well, why would people support globalization anyway when it just leads to broken communities? Larry is not alone in his waking nightmare. Oaktree Capital Management founder Howard Marks also loses sleep over the demise of centralized, corporate-driven, neoliberal-infused, government-enforced globalization. Marks and the WEF said in April, "The war is forcing the pendulum of international affairs to swing away from globalization as companies and governments begin to rethink their interdependence. To be sure, authoritarian regimes often cut themselves off from the global market for a host of reasons. Russia's Vladimir Putin is just one example. If not for the lies, these guys would be standing naked. According to the World Economic Forum, Putin is an authoritarian because he understands the global elite want to kill him, destroy Russia, and turn its JDAM blasted smouldering remains into mutually hostile little banter stands, thus easily plundered and controlled. It has nothing to do with interdependence or the joke that is democracy. That's just feel-good PR pablum designed to deceive you. The basic problem with globalization is not hard to grasp," writes Mike Whitney. "The giant corporations have outsourced millions of high-paying manufactured jobs to low-wage platforms across Asia, leaving behind thousands of shuttered factories and broken communities, a sharp spike in opiate addiction, and the steady erosion of living standards." I mean, you can see what state the West is in today. You would think that more countries in the East would not want to have anything to do with globalization. I mean, what other countries are there? You've got China, which is standing against it. You've got North Korea standing against it. You've got India, which is pretty much going for this multipolar world alongside Russia. I mean, you haven't really got many countries left for them to actually do this to. I mean, I guess Ukraine is quite a large country. What else do they stand to gain from this, Matt, apart from sort of destabilizing Russia? I mean, why is it that Ukraine is so important to them? It doesn't really have any other reason, does it, other than destabilizing Russia?
Well, Russia's empire status, at least according to some people, depends on whether or not it controls Ukraine. It is about the size of France. Of course, it's being depopulated, which is no accident. I also guarantee you that when this is over, if whatever is left of Ukraine in the West, however they divide up the country, you're going to see a massive invasion of Africans and Middle Easterners there. And if Ukrainians actually believe, you know, I know Ukrainians very, very well. I went to grad school with them. I was part of their community out there in the Midwest. If they really think that this regime gives a damn about nationalism or independence, they're sadly mistaken. It's like how the people, Muslims in Kosovo, actually believe that. No, they're going to be destroyed just like everybody else. You know, in the early part of the 20th century, there was a Cossack military coup. That was the only hope for Ukraine in that extremely in the 1920s, or sorry, 1918, in the extreme chaos of that era. I don't think there's much of a military left, but the Cossacks are still around. And while I don't know any of them personally, I know that they're vehemently opposed to this, and many of them have gone to Turkey, as they did, you know, 400 years ago. And remember, I am a very proud authoritarian. I think a lot of us are. And just think of South Africa. If you, what is the end goal? You know, in de Klerk's early 90s and mid 90s cabinet, the economic positions were held by overwhelmingly by Jews. And I used to work for the Spotlight. We ran article after article on that, and completely deindustrialized. Groups set on each other. Illiteracy, the assaults on white people. This is what's going to happen to what's left of Ukraine. And I have the feeling that something along these lines is planned for every European country. But you're right in talking about the American lack of allies. When they try to steal assets, when they start wars, when they pull out of treaties, no one trusts the U.S. I think really all they can rely on now, clearly, is London and Tokyo, maybe Taipei, and maybe Seoul, South Korea. That's pretty much it, because most of the world, a lot of Africa, all of Central Asia, much of East Asia, is on the side of China and Russia, including the Philippines. And once the president there got rid of the drug trade, how the U.S. was fuming. So you'll see more localized versions of ISIS, that American-created Western intelligence militia that never seems to run out of money or ammunition, all over the place. This is how the U.S. is going to make up for its lack of, you know, the missiles, the ammunition. There, the U.S. is running out, and you don't have the productive capacity you used to have 20 years ago, just in terms of basic materiel. So the military right now is a nightmare. The Pentagon, of course, has never been audited. They don't know how much money they have or where it's going. Their stockpiles are not well cared for, nor are they kept track of. So, you know, this is just the beginning here. But ultimately, you know, the final goal is one world with a constantly shrinking population, without families, just isolated individuals living in a virtual reality, drugged or not, it doesn't matter, that have no other cognitive purpose. And in other words, they can't think outside of this box to serve whatever corporate master runs the virtual reality that they're surrounded by. Everything's censored. Everything is sanitized. And that's the ultimate goal. That would be the ultimate profit-maximizing idea that's implied by the Great Reset. Russia's invasion of Georgia in 08, Ukraine last year, is about the war. This war is World War III. And just like in World War II, whatever ideology wins is going to dominate the globe. And that's why this is so important.
Well, Putin seems to have rather a charitable view of his opponents. We'll have a look at some quotes from him now. Putin argued the elite are oblivious to the effect of their predation. I disagree. Pathocrats enjoy witnessing the misery of millions. That's how they get their jollies. If they are oblivious to anything, it is that many of them may be swinging from the lampposts before this is over. And that was obviously a quote by the author. We have a quote by Putin now. It seems like elites don't see the deepening stratification in society and the erosion of the middle class, but the situation creates a climate of uncertainty that has a direct impact on the public mood. Sociological studies conducted around the world show that people in different countries and on different continents tend to see the future as murky and bleak. This is sad. The future does not entice them, but frightens them. At the same time, people see no real opportunities or means for changing anything, influencing events, and shaping policy. As for the claim that the fringe and populists have defeated the sensible, sober, and responsible minority, we are not talking about populists or anything like that, but about ordinary people, ordinary citizens who are losing trust in the ruling class. That is the problem. I think he's identified the problem well there. But to say that the elites don't see this, they're sort of making a mistake, you know, I think obviously he's wrong there. They do know exactly what they're doing. Zelensky and Fink are preparing to turn a profit on the destruction of Ukraine. J.D. Rucker writes, bringing in BlackRock signals the beginning of the much-anticipated shift from bilking taxpayers to bilking private investors. BlackRock will wield its tremendous influence over corporations across the globe to funnel as much private equity into the nation as possible, where the money will then be distributed to all the powerful parties, the oligarchs, that need their palms greased. So this is the point here, isn't it? The corruption that is going on there is just being hidden from the rest of the world. I mean, I've talked to people that have no idea that there's all this corruption is going on in Ukraine. And obviously the money that's been sent over there from America, that's going to these oligarchs. And now they're going to start diverting the money from these private investments into the oligarchs as well. I mean, I'm surprised that there's so few people that are actually writing about this. So there are some Republicans now, Matt, aren't there, that are starting to talk about this black hole of a money pit that is Ukraine. Do you think any of these Republicans are serious about this and that they will expose this corruption that's going on there and try to prevent America giving funds to them and also BlackRock giving funds as well? Do you think, Matt?
Even if they did, it certainly wouldn't be the mainstream. It would be younger, more recently elected members. I've heard this at the local level. And I keep telling you that a lot of these people read us and listen to us. They'll never admit it in a billion years, but they do. And as you know, I've been talking about this precise topic for the last 20 years, 15 years at least since 2004. So, but even if they were to put it out, you don't have the mental infrastructure to process it. Americans don't know what BlackRock is. And even if you've done, I know this from experience, even if you explain that there is no sector of the global economy that they don't have a direct interest in and thus control, that is such a sweeping claim that they can't, it's like error 404. Their firmware stops working. And they kind of yay you to death. And, you know, this has happened a million times to me. So even if they did, you know, Americans don't give a damn about Ukraine, and as they shouldn't. You know, it doesn't really impact them. And yet money desperately needed at home is being sent to not to the Ukrainian military, certainly not to the population, but to a handful of elites to build a military that very impoverished country couldn't afford in a million years. So here you have people on the brink of starvation in many parts of the country, and yet the U.S. is demanding that they build a navy with aircraft carriers and all this other nonsense that they couldn't build no matter what. But Putin is right. And I think really what he means, and we've talked about this before, is that they live in the sanitized bubble that they force a lot of Americans and Englishmen to live in. And I think at least some of them start believing their own nonsense. They really do believe they're benefiting humanity. The difference between a sociopath and a narcissist is that a narcissist actually has a conscience. A sociopath does not. Cognitive dissonance is a nasty affliction if you're not a sociopath. But sociopaths do very well in this post-capitalist world, whether it be, you know, on either side of the Atlantic. And he's right about something else. Polls from everywhere, and we've actually touched on this a few times, no one has any faith in the future. And if, you know, and these polls often coming from the big names are manipulated. But internationally, you really can't get away from it. Now, as you know, I'm in the middle of writing a book on China as a national socialist state. There, you have polls both domestically and foreign that are just the opposite. They have a far greater identity with their government and belief that things are going better than they are anywhere else. You actually do have some optimism there, but nothing in the West. They're given official statistics and official ideology that says everything is fine and getting better, and yet they can walk out their front door and see that that's not true. And what that does psychologically to a people over decades, especially when you factor in the COVID thing, is to reduce them to bewildered clay that can be manipulated. They just don't have the cognitive awareness, at least in the main, to process how the global regime actually functions and how that directly affects them. So that's, I think, what Putin is really going for here. And no matter who tries to expose it, it's getting a mass audience is going to be very difficult. But thank God history isn't driven by masses. It's driven by fanatical small groups.
Well, the article finishes up with some future predictions. Corrupt government officials and the psychopathic oligarchs they serve will profit from the Zelensky-Fink scheme to rebuild what Russia will knock down. Russia is determined, for the sake of its national security, to turn Ukraine into a toothless, NATO-free rump state, a former oligarch-dominated state busted up into little harmless and easily controlled remnants. I don't have a crystal ball, but I believe Zelensky will ultimately flee the country with a proverbial suitcase stuffed with fiat, greenbacks, and equally devalued paper money of the European Union, following in the footsteps of previously defeated and humiliated autocrats. Larry Fink will continue to be Larry Fink. He will push stakeholder capitalism, squeaky clean window dressing for predatory neoliberalism. Larry knows what side of his bread gets the butter. That's why he has embraced woke politics. Stakeholder capitalism might just force CEOs to think twice before doing things that hurt the public, the New York Post surmises. More PR poison. For Klaus Schwab and the WEF, the framework of stakeholder capitalism must be globalized, observes Michael Rechtenwald at Mises Wire. Schwab and the WEF have high hopes for rebranded neoliberalism merged with the preposterous woke ideology. It's not going to happen. The collective nations of the world, led by the example of Russia, will ultimately pitch neoliberalism into the dustbin of history. The problem is the WEF and globalist psychopaths, deluded by mental illness and corrosive hubris. They may indeed begin the process of irradiating the planet and making any sort of social and commercial activity a relic of a forgotten past. So he thinks that they are not going to succeed. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
I agree with him in the main. Neoliberalism is totally unsustainable. Economically, politically, and ideologically. It goes against every natural law you could possibly even conceive of. But you see the media here. The New York Post is no different from any other newspaper talking about stakeholder capitalism, which in practical terms comes down to these NGOs like Amnesty International, these liberal groups financed by corporate America to have a role in corporate decision making. But that's no different than Larry Fink. But one quick correction. He says, Larry knows what side of his bread gets the butter. No, he's the person who butters it. He is not a victim of anything. If there is, Larry Fink is one of the most powerful men, if not the most powerful man in the world. He embraced that leftist politics because he's Jewish. And that's what they do. And there is no investment company that can afford to ignore BlackRock and do what they're told. Zelensky has already fled the country several times by now, especially when the war first started. I think he's right. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, this massive coalition, Russia, China, Central Asia, parts of Africa, the Middle East, and the color revolutions, you know, have been failing all over the place. And the U.S. simply doesn't have the money, and it doesn't, as a government, it doesn't have the money or the military apparatus to do much about it. He's absolutely right here, and I think that's at least one way to start off the new year on a positive note.
Well, it certainly is positive to think that neoliberalism and Larry Fink and the West will basically lose to the East and the multipolar world rather than the singular polar New World Order. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.